Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. The Grim Tale of Grace Macabre, Chapter 24. Detective Martin sat at his desk, reading over his notes, trying to make sense of the Justin Jones case. He took Justin's journal from the evidence bag and flipped through it. The handwriting was neat and deliberate. Not until the last 4 entries did the handwriting change. It was subtle, but noticeable, as if someone knew they couldn't perfectly copy his handwriting and tried to make it look as if he had scrawled the last entries while under the stress of intense emotion. He flipped to previous entries, looking for others that indicated Justin was upset. He found several where Justin defined his extreme angst and hatred for Brandon, but in all those, the handwriting was still neat and deliberate. As he flipped between the previous entries and the last 4, he felt someone watching him. He looked up and saw Detective Madison, a tall, athletically built blonde woman standing a few feet away. "Sorry to disturb you," she said, "but I wanted to talk to you about the case I'm working. Maybe get your insights."
"Sure," he said. "Call me Jeff. Take a seat and tell me how I can help."
Madison sat in the chair in front of his desk.
"Thanks, Jeff. You can call me Haley. As you know, I transferred here from Los Angeles a few weeks ago. I was assigned the Crawling Man case because I worked a lot of child abductions when I was there. But this case is different. It doesn't have the feel of trafficking or any of the other normal abduction reasons. I was hoping to get your thoughts." Jeff had been in the squad room when the sheriff had introduced Haley to the rest of the force. However, he had not had the time to have any real communication with her. Sitting here in front of her, he could see she was confidently self-possessed. He knew that Sheriff Mosley would not have brought her on if she wasn't an excellent detective, so he felt that her asking for help was not the real reason she was here. He decided to play along, wondering if she would reveal her true motives.
"Well, I can tell you that Nevermore is not your normal town."
"How so?" Haley asked.
"Well, this town and the surrounding county seem to have an above-average amount of violent crimes and missing persons cases," Jeff said. "Per capita, we are the worst in the country. And many of those cases are just strange and dark.
Well, I spent 3 years working the beat as a detective in Los Angeles and Hollywood, Haley replied. I think I have a pretty good idea of what is strange and dark. Jeff liked how she stood her ground.
I imagine so, with all those fruit-bat actors and power-mad producers.
We live in dark times, Haley said, and I have come to believe that Hollywood sits over the main gates of hell.
Jeff sat up straighter in his chair. While he knew that some folks in Nevermore felt the strange and dark things that happened here were supernatural, he couldn't bring himself to believe in any darkness other than the darkness of man. He couldn't tell by her tone if she was speaking metaphorically about Hollywood. There was a matter-of-factness to her statement that seemed to indicate she believed what she said to be true.
"Care to elaborate?" he asked.
Haley locked eyes with him, and he felt that she was sizing him up, deciding if he would accept her truthful answer. Instead of elaborating, she said,
"Let's just say I'm open to the idea that the person who is abducting these kids may have a darker intent than we can imagine."
Jeff found himself unable to get a definite read on Haley, which was rare for him. He had been a detective for so long that he practically had a sixth sense when it came to reading people. He found Haley extremely interesting.
"I'll give you that," he said. "So, is there anything specific you want to ask?"
"Yes," said Haley. "The other night, Mr. Breeman called stating he was visited by some kids with black eyes. I'd like to know your thoughts on that."
Jeff considered his response. Clearly, Haley was dancing around something.
"I think those kids were pranking him."
Haley paused before continuing, carefully choosing her words.
"So, you don't think the abductions and the black-eyed children are linked in any way?"
Jeff leaned forward in his chair and put his elbows on the desk.
"Why would I?"
Haley also leaned forward, as if purposefully closing the distance between them.
"Children are being abducted here in town," she said, "and at about the same time it begins, we start getting reports about black-eyed children roaming around playing pranks on adults. You don't find that odd?"
Jeff had not considered the correlation between these two occurrences.
"But if you are somehow suggesting, Haley, that these black-eyed kids are abductees, why wouldn't they ask for help if they've escaped? Why wouldn't they want to be saved instead of running around pranking people?"
"Maybe they haven't escaped," Haley said. "Maybe they don't want to be rescued. What if they are helping their abductor? Maybe they are trying to lure people in."
"Well, I've heard of such things," Jeff said. "Kids get abducted and are brainwashed to think their abductor loves them, then set about helping abduct other kids. It's very cultish, but if this were the case, why the black contact lenses?"
Haley's phone buzzed. She glanced at it and then stood.
"What makes you think they're wearing contact lenses?"
Before Jeff could answer, she turned and walked out of his office, leaving him sitting in wonder at what she could have possibly meant.
The Grim Tale of Grace McCobb, Chapter 25. Grace didn't even remember driving home. She kept replaying the two most important moments of her afternoon. The first was the glorious, heart-stopping kiss. The second was the revelation that she had free will to choose her own destiny. She had found passion and liberation at that field, and there would be no looking back. She loved her family and knew that they loved her, though that love had evolved into her mind into something that was stifling. Instead of liberating her, she was beginning to see their love shackled her, kept her sheltered, and therefore was the cause of her shyness and naivete. So, she resolved to immediately begin asserting herself. However, she sensed she needed to choose her battles. She would begin by taking firm stances on small things, by making her feelings known. She would eventually start doing whatever she wanted, whenever she wanted, and would let no one, whether at school or at home, stop her. She could see how asserting yourself could be addictive. As she pulled into the driveway of her uncle's house, she knew what her first step with her family would be. She would choose to not go to church tomorrow. Everyone in her family knew that she didn't really believe in God anyway, and that she was just attending church to please them. So, as she shut off the engine, she resolved to stand her ground. She would not let them force her to go to church. She got out of the car, still blissfully oblivious to the world around her, and started for the porch when she heard a curious sound in the sky above the house. She looked up. The late afternoon sun was behind her, casting bluish shadows from the tall live oaks that lined the street. The sharp points of the beautiful Victorian house were bathed in golden light, and the windows reflected that same light and sparkled as if they were a beacon to the lost. As the curious sound became louder, Grace could hear that it was melodious, as if someone were singing a beautiful song. Suddenly, a flock of remarkably strange birds soared over the roof. They were magnificent with their long, sleek necks and their aerodynamic bodies. They were in a near-perfect V formation, gracefully flapping their elegant wings, propelling themselves masterfully across the cloudless sky. Grace could not identify these birds, for she had never seen anything quite like them. They were brightly colored, reminding her of parrots with chests of bright red and wings that glimmered in hues of blue. They had long, graceful beaks, and their heads were crested with small sprays of quills that seemed to change color as if they were made of fiber optic wires. Grace, at least for the moment, forgot about the field and the kiss. She was compelled to watch these magnificent birds glide across the sky in breathtaking splendor. The setting sun reflected off their bodies, illuminating subtle variations of color in their heads, necks, and wings. She watched in wonder as they flew overhead and soared over the tops of the brightly colored oaks. She stood for a moment, listening to their song, which was majestic and joyful. Then they were gone, leaving her feeling disappointed that they were no longer with her. "Are you in some kind of trance?" someone said behind her. "Or did that stupid movie melt your brain?" She turned to see that Zach had stepped onto the porch. "Did you see those birds?" Zach looked up into the sky and scrunched up his face. "Been standing here ever since you got out of the car," he said. "Didn't see any birds." "They just flew over," Grace said. "There were like 10 of them. They were beautiful, and I've never seen anything like them. They seemed almost alien." Zach raised his eyebrows to suggest that Grace had lost her mind. "Do you hear voices in your head?" Grace couldn't believe that he hadn't seen the birds. They flew so low and were so loud in their bird song.
"Stop messing with me, Zach," she said.
"Okay," Zach replied. "I saw them. There were 100 of them, and they were flying backward. Didn't one of them have a tattoo? I know for sure I saw lasers on their wings."
Grace shook her head. "Sometimes you make me crazy, Zach. You really do."
Zach turned and started back into the house. "You're the one seeing imaginary birds," he said.
"Anyway, you missed it."
"Missed what?" she replied.
"You had a visitor while you were gone, and it got spooky."
"What do you mean?" Grace asked. She couldn't think of anyone who would come to visit her, let alone know that she was staying with her aunt and uncle this weekend.
"It was that girl," Zach said. "Sarah, that crazy psycho who wants to kill you. She showed up like an hour ago."
Grace stopped cold upon hearing this information.
"Really?" she asked.
Zach opened the door, which was painted a deep red and had a large oval pane of glass in the center.
"Yes," he replied. "When Uncle Jim answered the door, she asked for you. And when he said you weren't here, the girl asked him to let you know that Sarah was looking for you. Mom came to the door to see who it was, and when she heard Sarah give her name, she said she was going to call the police."
"Who called the police? Mom?"
Zach nodded. "Well, she was going to, but Sarah disappeared."
"She ran away?" Grace asked. She couldn't make up her mind if Sarah was a threat or not, though the rest of her family clearly thought that she was. But she was becoming wary because of Sarah's strange behavior.
"I guess," Zach replied. "What do you mean by that?"
"Well, Mom told her that she was going to call the police, but Uncle Jim tried to get her to just talk with Sarah to understand her side of the story. But Mom didn't want to take any chances. Anyway, while Mom and Uncle Jim were standing here talking about what to do, Sarah just disappeared."
"You mean like evaporated into thin air?" Grace asked.
"Be serious, Zach. You're exaggerating again, aren't you?"
"No, seriously," Zach said.
"I mean, nobody saw her vanish? But when Mom and Uncle Jim turned their attention back to speak to Sarah, she was gone. There's something spooky about that girl."
"But why would she run away?" Grace asked, shrugging off the supernatural explanation that Sarah had simply vanished into thin air.
"She could have spoken with the police and told her side of the story. She could have cleared everything up."
They stepped into the foyer and Zach closed the door.
"I don't know," he said. "But if it was me, and I was a guilty psychopath, I would run too. Or, in her case, use my crazy nut job magic to disappear."
"What makes you think she's a psychopath?" Grace asked, following Zach into the kitchen. She had been waffling back and forth on how to perceive Sarah. Was she trying to help, or was she a threat?
"Because she's a babbling lunatic," Zach said. He opened a cookie jar and began rummaging around for a cookie. "She told Mom that she was here to remind you about Oikos and that you should be careful."
Grace's blood ran cold. "Oikos?" she said.
"What else did she say?"
"Nothing," Zach said. "It was right after that when she disappeared. Anyway, Uncle Jim looked up the word, and it's a Greek word that means family. Mom thinks Sarah was trying to use some kind of twisted psycho nut job code on you."
"What does she think Sarah meant?"
Zach took a bite of chocolate chip cookie. He spoke with his mouth full. "Mom thinks that Sarah was threatening us as a family because you got Ian shot. She thinks that Sarah wants to kill us all."